بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on November 27th by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with besiegees from throughout the country.
In those rich countries ruled by the system of domination, countries such as the U.S. and some European countries which are wealthy, people die of hunger on the streets. As for the people in other countries, they display injustice as much as they can. It is against freedom as well. The most important kind of freedom for a nation is the public freedom of countries. In other words, independence. Once, I said that independence means the freedom of nations. When we speak about freedom, we are speaking about the freedom of nations so that they can freely do what they want to do. The system of domination is against such freedom. One day with colonialism, another day with neocolonialism, and today with modern methods, the methods used in soft wars, they create a disastrous situation for nations. Of course, wherever necessary, they bring their armed forces to the arena and they do not have any scruples whatsoever.
A very dangerous plot was foiled by the people themselves.
In the present time, the Americans have entered the eastern part of the Euphrates in Syria, and they say they are there for the sake of oil. Is that area your home? It belongs to another country. But they say that they have shown their presence because there is oil there and that they have come for oil. They do not feel embarrassed to acknowledge this, and they say it openly. Or they enter a country such as Iraq without any permission. They do not seek the permission of the government of that country, and they do not go to the capital. Rather, they go to their own bases because they have some bases there. This signifies that they officially insult the freedom and independence of nations. So the system of domination is both anti-justice and anti-freedom. Islam is the flag bearer of justice and freedom. Islam is the flag bearer of justice. It is the flag bearer of freedom, and it does so without any considerations and in an outspoken manner. Islam does not hide its claims. It confronts oppression and injustice in an outspoken manner.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. To Allah.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,710 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. On FM, 91.5 megahertz for Iran. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our radio quality and other means.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's a pleasure to have you with us on Iran Radio here in the capital, Tehran. Here's what's just around the corner in the next hours. Our next segment offers a moment of reflection and wisdom. Join us for Hadith of the Day, hosted by Sheikh Muhammad Jafar Danish. This program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them all, every day along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. In this program, hadiths relating to a particular lunar calendar date or solar calendar date are presented. Then it's time to explore how to achieve a fulfilling life with A to Z of life. Sister Zainab James will present an Islamic-Iranian lifestyle making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, hadith, as well as inspirational poetry, parables, and stories. Then it's time for the spotlight on the day's significant events. This daily program features a roundtable analysis and discussion of topical and controversial issues. Two expert guests provide insightful analysis. Don't miss it. Then it's time for Islamic Laws, hosted by Hujjatul Islam Sheikh Javed Akbari. This program focuses on Islamic jurisprudential rulings based on the fatwas of prominent scholars or maraji. Each episode addresses practical religious questions and explores common issues that arise in daily life. Next on deck, we have Hadith of the Day. Stay with us.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the Day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. My condolences to you for the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam based on a weaker narration than the one which is 2 days after Ashura. So today we have a beautiful hadith, a deep one from His Eminence, His Holiness, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. In a world where people seek advantages through their connections, whether family, fame, or influence, Imam Sajjad, Ahlul Bayt actually, all of them, stood tall with quiet dignity. Imam Sajjad Salam once said, I never ate anything because of my kinship with the Messenger of Allah. Let that sink in. He, the great grandson of the Prophet, the son of Imam Hussein, the inheritor of not just blood but of character, knowledge, and divine leadership, he refused to benefit personally from his relationship to the Prophet. Can you imagine that today? Most people, if they're related to someone famous or powerful, use it as currency, a VIP pass, a shortcut, a way to say, I am someone important, treat me differently. But Imam Sajjad alayhi salam thinks that way, didn't think this way. He could have asked for favors, wealth, or power, but he chose dignity over privilege and responsibility over reward. Because in his eyes, being related to the Prophet wasn't about getting more, it was about giving more. Let's talk about this from the viewpoint of psychology. Modern research shows that entitlement, feeling like we deserve special treatment, correlates with narcissism, poor relationships, and even depression. But people who adapt a mindset of responsibility, of earning rather than expecting, are healthier, more respected, and more fulfilled. That's exactly what we see in the character of the Imam. He didn't expect the world to bow because of his lineage. He instead humbled himself in worship, served the poor in secret, and wept in prayer until the ground beneath him was soaked with tears. And this attitude is deeply rooted in the Quran too. Allah says, "Inna akramakum indallahi atqakum." The most honored of you is in the sight of Allah is the one with the most taqwa, most purity, God consciousness. Not the richest, not the most famous, not even the one with the highest family status, but the most God conscious. Imam Sajjad lived that verse with every breath. So what can we learn? Don't rely on your background to define you. Earn respect with character, not connections. And use your influence to uplift others, not yourself. Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Tales full of sadness and woe, but I believe you smile again. You see, I know the pain you're feeling, 'cause I was there just like you. Oh,
You'll be outcast. Sometimes it's better to be alone than to be with the bad crowd. Preserve your mind and feed it. Nourish what it is you have inside. Use it in the right way.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, A Leader Leads. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on RMB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously, the statement is, you know, it's self-explanatory in some ways. A leader leads, well, obviously, but I'm going to talk a bit more about, well, what actually is leading. And obviously, in sort of, you know, because many of us have maybe listened to some of these insights from entrepreneurs and psychologists and people of sort of business mindset. So, you know, we're always sort of hearing these sorts of things. But, you know, what is leadership? And leadership is, you know, not just telling people what to do. It's way more than that. And I think probably with an Islamic background, we sort of understand or know leaders behave in a very different way. And for sure, there will be awareness of that even in non-Islamic environments. But, you know, I'm firmly believe that we have the best examples in Islam. So I'm just going to mention a sort of rather a behavior from one of the most famous martyrs of the Holy Defense, Shaheed Dr. Mustafa Jamghan. And so he was And this is possibly not news to many of us, because many of us have heard of we know of the way that he would behave. So he was always at the front of everything, basically. And this is also in the battlefront, basically. He would always encourage people to follow him. So obviously we're not talking about the leader. So traditionally, and if I just focus in on, for example, like the in sort of warfare, traditionally, if you read any sort of history books on warfare, it's, you know, it's the leaders and they tell their subordinates, the soldiers, to go and do what they're supposed to do. But, you know, they stay behind the front lines. So I'm going to explain this a bit more, and I'm going to get away from this very narrow example too. Welcome back to A to Z here on IIB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And so obviously I'm talking about leadership and sort of leading, and obviously this traditional, this idea in traditional sort of, I'd say, more Western warfare, where, you know, the leaders, the commanders sort of tell the soldiers to go and, you know, go to the front, go and fight, and they stay back, basically. And obviously we know from our leaders in, for example, the Holy Defence, in any Islamic, so even in the early battles in Islamic history, the Holy Prophet and obviously Imam Ali, they're always there right at the front. And Imam Ali would be holding the flag, obviously, as a flag bearer too. And the Holy Prophet was not holding back. He was there amongst the men leading. And obviously, and this is something that I've referred to, the behaviour of the famous Shaheed Dr. Mustafa Chamoun. He was there at the very front of the battle lines, and he always wanted to basically sacrifice himself for his fellow soldiers. So his idea was not that, oh, he's superior, he's the commander, so, you know, they can go, the other soldiers who don't have that rank can go and, you know, go and be a bit further, a bit closer to the danger. No, he understood his role, that obviously he would lead, he would be ahead, and the others could follow, to the extent even that he was happy to sacrifice himself. So he would risk his life and sort of protect and safeguard his fellow soldiers if there was the need. And so sometimes, and obviously one of the most difficult things in these sorts of operations at the battlefront are the sort of reconnaissance missions. And he would even go ahead in some of those and sort of identify different areas. So, you know, so what's the moral, the lesson we get from this? And that is that no matter what it is we are wanting to lead, we really must lead by example. And this is, for example, even in the workplace, if we want our colleagues, if we want subordinates to do something in particular, we need to actually show them what it is we need them to do. Even if it means that we lose a lot of our time, we have to do something that's a bit more unpleasant, or we're much more qualified to do that, and why should we? No, we need to do, we actually need to lead. That's the only way to lead. And so inshallah, we can implement this a bit in our lives, and farewell for now, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z, and for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Humanitarian aid, access to food, water, and medicine has long been considered a fundamental red line that governs conduct during war, conflicts, and even genocide. UN agencies, the Red Cross, doctors, and journalists have traditionally been granted immunity in these situations, regardless of the brutality unfolding around them. But the recent events in Gaza, where Israel's actions has rewritten international law through the bloodshed of Palestinians and the silence of the world, has shattered this principle. In the past month alone, at least 109 Palestinians have been killed at 8 distribution centers operated by the U.S. Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Just today, 36 desperate Palestinians lost their lives. The UN no longer wants a famine in Gaza. It declares that famine is already here. We now live in a world that has grown disturbingly accustomed to watching children literally starve to death. This is the reality we'll examine today on The Spotlight.
Famine warnings in Gaza are ignored. The United Nations says the Israeli siege has left hundreds of thousands of children under the age of 5 malnourished. The only sliver of hope for starving civilians in Gaza is the U.S.-administered aid centers that are essentially killing machines.
As of the 13th of July, we have recorded 875 people killed in Gaza while trying to get food. 674 of them were killed in the vicinity of GHF sites.
And the deliberate targeting of aid-seeking civilians has been clearly recounted by survivors.
They started shooting at us, and we lied down on the ground. Tanks and military vehicles arrived. Soldiers got out of them and started shooting at people while they were on the ground. Then they withdrew, and we started checking ourselves, and there were about 20 martyrs.
The United Nations has openly called these American sites a death trap and stressed Israel's obligation to allow more aid in.
People are being killed simply trying to feed themselves and their families. The search for food must never be a death sentence. Let me be clear. Israel, as the occupying power, is required by international law to agree to and to facilitate humanitarian relief. Meanwhile, humanitarian operations continue to be strangled.
UN representatives have also criticized the U.S.-backed aid centers, saying they violate international principles.
Tragic incidents in Gaza near GHF sites remind us that there are no blurred lines with regard to the respect of international humanitarian law.
Far from addressing humanitarian issues, these mechanisms have become symbols of dishonoring human dignity and putting the lives of those in need at risk.
Yet the Israeli regime continues to kill those seeking aid, and the international community fails to take tangible action. And even though Palestinians remain resilient, the world should not ignore its duty to protect innocent lives.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And now let us bring in our guest joining us now from Ramallah. We have Saad Nimr, Professor of Political Science at Birzeit University. We also have Mohsin Saleh, academic and political commentator, joining us from Beirut. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. So this is an issue you guys are well familiar with. But let us start from Ramallah first with Mr. Saad Nimr. The current impact of the Israeli atrocities and the blockade of aid on Gaza's civilian, especially the young population, in your opinion, how will that change going forward, the way the world is going to be looking at war, the engagement of war, or any sort of conflict going forward?
Well, I think even for today it became, you know, unbearable totally what's going on in Gaza, and especially when you are mentioning the issue of hunger and thirst for the Palestinian people in Gaza. What the world is doing, the world is conspiring against the Palestinians in Gaza. This is, I mean, you know, especially Western countries, apart from, you know, few only, maybe we can, put an exception for them, but the rest are all participants in this genocidal war, and especially with hunger. Everyone is seeing what's going on. When we are talking about numbers, so far we are talking about 69 children died because of hunger so far. Today we have three died of hunger, this day. We are talking about 60,000 other children are under the threat of being killed and died because of hunger. We are talking about 55,000 women who are pregnant, and maybe they will be, you know, can't even give birth, or the children can't get enough food and milk, the babies, I mean. And this is also under this danger. What we are talking about here is a kind of a war which is designed in a way to exterminate the Palestinians in Gaza. And what is the reaction of the world? The reaction of the world is silence. Now Gaza is eating this word silence. That's what they eat in Gaza. What the world is doing is doing nothing to what's going on. Where is the United Nations? Why United Nations can't even discuss this issue? It became unbearable. It became now unstoppable by Israel. What about the European countries? As I said, apart from a few countries here and there. But mostly, where are the 57 Islamic countries, including Arab countries? Where are they? I mean, okay, don't send rockets to Israel. Don't fight with Israel, but at least send some food, for God's sake. Put some pressure. Make some really big noise about what's going on. I'm really, really sorry. I'm sorry today. I'm angry because what's going on is became now over even that you can think of what's going on. People are dying in front of our eyes, on screens, and no one is doing anything, and no one wanted to do anything.
Okay, stay with me. I want to cross over now to Beirut, to Mr. Mohsin Saleh. Mr. Mohsin Saleh, you just heard what our previous guest said about 60,000 children who are at the verge of, you know, starving to death. And we have a situation, like he mentioned, where the Arabs, in the recent visit by Trump, were able to give trillions of dollars. Like he mentioned, no one is expecting any missiles to be sent, but at least some sort of political pressure to be applied to the Americans to allow for at least aid to come in, just like some sort of political pressure was applied to assist Syria to lift some of its sanctions. Why do you think there is this inability of the Arabs to collectively act to protect Gaza in whatever capacity they can?
Good evening to you and to your guest, and greetings, all the greetings to the audiences in Palestine, and as well in the Arab and the Islamic world and the international community who are having this feeling towards this genocide, this massacres, daily massacres in Gaza. And unfortunately, Arabs and the what's so called the international community or the society in the United States and in the Arab world, all of them, they are looking at this catastrophe without without paying any kind of feeling or having passion or compassion towards these people, these children, these women who are looking for food and looking for life and looking for a safe place, safe haven in order to live. Unfortunately, this international community has been seeing and looking and to this problem without raising finger, without raising voice, without even condemning such acts of the of these atrocities of the Zionists. And also they talk about more dangerous thing that Witkoff or others talk to Katz or some of the Israelis, especially the Mossad, talking about delivering the Palestinians as if they are commodities to Libya and Ethiopia and also to Indonesia. It's unfortunate to see this problem is taking these ramifications in all aspects in terms of nationality, in terms of religion, in terms of homeland, in terms of culture, and all kinds of concepts and technical terms that we use in the media. I guess Gaza is fighting alone, well, with some help from Yemen, from taban the axis of resistance, which will come back soon, will come back, because this international community cannot stay like this. There are people who are fighting and who are collecting themselves and their efforts in order to defend Palestine and defend Gaza. And soon will the people in Palestine and the Arab world will have this revolt and rebellion against these plans and these conspiracies against the Palestinians, and Palestine will be the beginning. What's going on in Syria, what's going on in Lebanon, what's going on in Iraq and other places, I guess it's in the same track, in the same way of understanding. The United States and the Israelis, of course, the Zionists are creating this chaos in order, what's so-called, to create a new Middle East, as Netanyahu expressed it, according to his greediness and according to his inhumane understanding of the relationship between the Arabs and the Israelis, and of course the international community. I would say I would blame, not only blame, condemn the Arab silence about what's happening in Gaza, especially those who are negotiating the truce and the ceasefire in Gaza. Aren't they saying seeing what's happening in Gaza? Every day the Israelis, the Zionists, these criminals are killing more than 100 Palestinians. That's between children and women who are seeking food, seeking a piece of bread in order to eat and try to satiate, if they satiate, their stomach and their food and their hunger. I would say that these Arabs take the responsibility as the Americans and the European Union, but the Arabs can be blamed more because they are on the borders. Yes. What are they doing except talking to the Israelis?
Yes.
You should boycott all kinds of relations with this usurpation and with this occupation and with this killing. They are witnesses for these crimes.
Yes. Okay, stay with me. Let's cross over back to Ramallah. I guess Israel, in some aspects, can now claim that some of its war goals has been realized. Why? Because from the very beginning, Yon Golan said that when the genocide began. There will be no food, there will be no water, there will be no electricity. Everything will be cut off. And we saw the systematic attack on the UNRWA, on, you know, food aid companies and organizations that came to try to replace the UNRWA, and then the United States tried the pair where they claim it's going to be the pair they're going to be using to bring aid in. That failed, and now we have the, what is it called, the Gaza, so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation that the UN has now called a debt trap. We spoke to our correspondent earlier today, and he said a bag of flour now costs $1,000. People are literally going 5 days without food. In your opinion, how can the international community, or whatever is left of it, deal with this kind of fundamental fracture in human existence? Because it's not going to go away, is it?
Yes, that's absolutely right. What they can do lots of things. They can do a lot, as a matter of fact, in ending this this situation. But the question is whether they can or whether they want to do something about it. This is the problem. They have the ability to do it. They can boycott Israel. They can force Israel. They can go to the United Nations General Assembly. They can go to the Security Council. They can force Israel to do it. They can stop all kind of relationship with Israel if they continue with this. Arab countries, as your guest also mentioned, especially Egypt, who have all these food and aid on their borders, it's a matter of their own supremacy over Rafah crossing, and it's a matter of supremacy over their own land. And this crossing is between the Palestinians and Egypt, so they can open it, forced to open it, in spite of everything. They can do all these kind of things. There are a lot of things they can do. But the question is whether they are willing to do that or not. And this is the problem. That's why we are saying that all these countries, and especially Arab countries, are conspiring with the Israelis and the Americans against the Palestinian people. We hold them responsibility for this massacre is going on in and genocide war. They are responsible for what's going on. Because and even the European countries and all other countries who did not do anything at all, once you know what's going on and you see what's going on and you do nothing at all, it means that you are participating in this crime. So that's exactly the situation. Now, for the UNRWA announced today that they have enough food and aid for Gaza, enough for 3 months for all the people in Gaza, the 2.3 million people in Gaza. They have enough food for them and water and supplies for 3 months at least. But all that aid is stuck at the borders, either in Rafah or in the other Israeli crossings. And Israel and the Americans are not allowing at all this kind of help and aid to get into Gaza. So this is a United Nations organization. So what the United Nations should do, and the United Nations now, they are sending all these reports. They're talking about everything, and but at the same time, they are doing nothing, because they know that if there is a kind of a resolution coming from the Security Council, the American will stand to help Israel and to block and to veto any kind of resolution. And that's why we are saying that we should go to the General Assembly and try to force the Security Council under the 7th article to do something about what's going on, and it is immediately. Otherwise, all these countries are participants in this massacre and in this genocidal war.
Okay, let's cross over back to Beirut. We had a speech from Abu Ubaidah a few days ago, I think it was yesterday, where many are saying that is one of his most direct, speech yet, where he actually named some of the countries that refused to participate to assist Gaza, and also talk about the fact that resistance operations continues across Gaza despite the inhumane condition that exists. And you also mentioned the fact that the resistance will not be able to sit out and continue to wait as this unimaginable catastrophe unfolds before the eyes of the world. In your opinion, what do you think may happen? Because many of I've already said that the resistance in Lebanon perhaps is weak. The resistance in Iraq is tied. The resistance in Gaza has been fighting on empty stomach for almost 2 years. Iran has gone to recently 12 days of altercation with the Israeli regime. What can the resistance do in this situation?
Well, as I always say and insist on, the access of resistance is strong and will come back stronger. And the operations in Gaza show that, and it's an evident for everybody that they continue to fight. And the Israelis, every day they say it's a dangerous day, it's a difficult day for them and for their soldiers and for their officers in Gaza, in Khan Yunis, in South Gaza, and in Nusayrat, and everywhere you will see operations. And they say that now, some of their analysts, political analysts, saying that we cannot uproot, or we cannot kill, or we cannot finish Hamas. That's why we should go to ceasefire in order to return their hostages. I would say that in spite of all this aggression from these Zionists, with the approval of the United States and the Western community, it's about time, as Abu Ubaidah said, for the Arabs, most of them, the elites in the political and for the cultural and for the social influences, I would say that they should all go to this battle in a one voice, in a unified voice, that saying stop this massacre, stop this genocidal war against Gaza. And the resistance in Lebanon is not that weak. In
yes.
Yemen, they are sending these missiles into the airport of Lead, and also to all parts, to Eilat and other places. So we are talking about a battle, an open war with
yes.
these with this occupation. In spite of this, I would say the Arab humiliation and defeat in their psychological spirit and in their soul and in their mind, they cooperate with this enemy in order to stop this resistance and in order to besiege this
yes.
resistance. But I would say there is no option between resistance and other choices.
Okay.
The resistance is our destiny.
Okay.
The resistance, we, in order to go for freedom, we have, and to liberate Gaza and other places, we have to fight till the end, because we need this kind of resistance. It's a historical resistance in Gaza for 21 months. They are continuing in spite of all these losses.
Yes,
but
okay.
I'm
so sorry to cut you short because we are out of time.
Freedom fighters, these stragglers who are fighting for the for these people who are strangled in Gaza.
Yes, okay, I'm sorry to cut you
yes.
short. Finally, I just want to go to our guest in Ramallah in less than a minute, if you can, your final thought as a Palestinian academic, as someone who has witnessed more than half of this occupation and seen it with your own eyes. You grew up with it. Your final word, please, in less than a minute, if you can.
Well, I do agree with your guest from Beirut. We have to fight back. There is no other option in front of us. For the last 30 years, we tried the peace process and we tried negotiations, but this colonial aggression called Israel, this colonial state called Israel, definitely are not going to give the Palestinians anything, and there is no way to be together with the Israelis in our negotiations. The only way is to resist the occupation, to resist this country, and to end this country totally. This is the only option in front of the Palestinians, either to live as slaves under the Israelis or to fight back to end this entity totally and to end this colonial state.
Okay. and the colonial state. That is where we will end this night's spotlight as well. Thank you so much to our guests for joining us. Saad Nimeris, Professor of Political Science, who joined us from Ramallah. We also have Mohsin Saleh, academic and political commentator, joining us from Beirut. Thank you so much for staying with us. From me, Zainab, and the rest of the team, goodbye.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, we started discussing some of the jurisprudential laws related to clothing and conspicuous garment according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei.